Well, good morning. Join with Ryan in saying welcome. We're really glad that you're here. My name is Brent. I'm the lead pastor here at Ashworth Road. Notes are falling on the ground there. Let's pick those up. We're really glad that you're here. If you've been here the last couple of weeks, you know that we're in the middle of this series that we're calling The Lost Arts, Ancient Practices for Postmodern Faith. And so we're doing this because we feel like there are practices that maybe we've lost, things that we should be doing, that we've stopped doing, or we've forgotten about doing, and things that maybe, just maybe, might help us grow a little deeper, a little stronger in our faith, and get to know God a little better. And so far, over the last couple of weeks, we've looked at, I think, what I would call two pretty easy ones, two pretty obvious ones, ones that you would expect to be a part of our faith. I mean, we looked the first week at prayer, and I think if you were to talk to anybody inside the church or outside and you'd say, what do Christians do? Prayer's going to come up in a list of top 3 to 5 or 10, right? I mean, prayer's kind of a big one, and you're going to think, okay, Christians should pray. And then last week, we looked at another one that I think was pretty easy. In fact, you're here this morning, so on some level, it's a part of your Christian experience, and that one is worship. And I think, too, that one would come up on a list of people's, you know, what are things that Christians should do? This one's going to be there. But today, we're going to come to an ancient practice that I'll be honest, this is confession moment, that I forget about, and honestly, I don't do, and I haven't done in a really long time. I used to do it, and after Carrie and I got married, and I took my first leadership role in a church, very young, 20 years old, you know, wide-eyed, and the world is my oyster, and I had believed the world would change and all that before I became cynical, Brent. This was a part of my routine and practice weekly, believe it or not. But then what I found with this practice is that as I got older, as I had kids, as I changed jobs and the demands of the job kind of began to get overwhelming and demand more and more of me, that my priorities changed and slowly this discipline just kind of dried up in my life. In fact, it moved from a, hey, I want to do this, to a, I should do this, to a, do I really need to do this, to a, do I have time to do this? In fact, I'll be honest, the reason I'm preaching this message today is because I drew the short straw in staff meeting. I'm just going to tell you, sometimes we're not the most spiritual pastors. I'm just going to lay that out there for you. Both Amy and Ryan let me know this week that they were not interested in preaching this sermon because, and I quote, I don't want to. Direct quote, Ryan Leonard said it, Amy Becker amended it. Yeah, that was about the topic. And as much as I would love to look at you guys, see, I love throwing them under the bus. That makes me so much easier to preach. As much as I would love to look at you and say, hey, come on, you guys, let's do this. This is amazing. It's great. I'm not so sure that there's not another spiritual discipline that so directly goes against our human nature and against our culture than this one. And what we're going to talk about today is the lost art of fasting. Fasting. Now, I'll be honest, there's a half of the, I love the kind of the groans already. It's like, oh, God, I think I need to, oh, man, is that my cell phone? Yeah, I'll be right in. You know, right off the bat, I love part of fasting because it deals with one of my favorite things in the whole world, just not in a way I want to deal with it. It deals with food. I love food. I do. I love food. I very rarely have met a food I didn't like. I mean, let's just think about it. You don't get this by not loving food, all right? Let's just be real. Mexican food, Thai food, Indian food, Chinese food, American food, breads and pastas, and don't get started on sweets. The only thing I'm not feeling really positive about right now in this moment is chili, and that is because, yeah, 43 years old and that much chili last night at the chili cook-off, not a great thing. You do pay for that. But anyway, I love food. And the problem with fasting is it sets me up in direct conflict with what I love so dearly. I mean, I'm an eat all the time kind of guy. I mean, I try not to keep too much stuff in my office because I would eat all the time. I eat for comfort, I eat for pleasure, I eat for boredom, you name it, I eat. But when it comes to fasting, it just sets up this conflict between what I love to do and what I probably should do, which is occasionally say no to myself. So technically speaking, when we talk about fasting, what we're talking about is just the voluntary abstinence from food. That's technically, when you say fasting, that's what it is. Now, there are probably a lot of other things when we think about fasting that we could throw into this category. There are probably a lot of other things that we can and probably should fast from at some level. But for most of our purpose today, we're going to look at it from a food perspective. But don't let that mean that that's the only acceptable or appropriate fast in your life. Because as we go through here, I'm going to throw in some things that might step on some toes. Things like fasting from social media that may be necessary in our lives, or fasting from media, period, that may be, or there may be people in our lives we need to fast from, or activities or hobbies that we need to say no to. And we're going to hopefully through this message today give you not just, hey, do this because you should, but hopefully as we get through this, we'll see that there are some tremendous reasons why. Some really great benefits that if we can take the time and the discipline to work this fasting thing into our lives, that can be really beneficial, really worth it in our growth and development. Essentially, though, you know, when we talk about fasting, it's telling ourselves no. And we're not too good at that, are we? I'm not too good at that at all. We live in a very self-indulgent culture, right? I mean, we hear all the time things like, if it feels good, do it. Why deny yourself any pleasure? You know, and the idea of intentionally denying yourselves anything honestly just makes you a weirdo. I mean, you know that person, right? You don't want to be like that person. But when we talk about looking at things in our lives and saying, well, maybe I shouldn't, maybe I should limit, maybe I should stop, yeah, it makes us kind of weird because nothing inside our culture tells us we should be doing this. There's a prevailing belief that tells us that if we want to experience everything life has to offer, then we need to satisfy every possible human appetite we can. I mean, that's kind of the understanding, that if you deny yourself, what do you think? You're missing out, right? I mean, that's kind of what the world tells us. It's this idea that, yeah, go ahead and deny yourself. You'll just be missing out on what really is out there. And so we battle against telling ourselves no and this idea that says, but what if I miss out? What if there is something that I'm going to not have the opportunity to partake in because I've told myself no? And on top of that, we're constantly fed these ideas that if we don't feed ourselves three large meals a day with snacks in between, we're just going to starve to death. Several months ago, I've told you guys before, every Monday morning in my office, there's a meeting and we talk about the next Sunday's sermon. We call that message community. And it's made up of me and Pastor Ryan, Pastor Amy, and Pastor Stephen. And so we sit around and we talk about the scripture and we challenge each other occasionally. It's kind of fun. Sometimes it's a little tense, but hey, it's okay. It's all to make us better preachers when we get up here. But a few months ago, I remember one of the American pastors, I'm not going to name this one, but came in and said something to the effect of, "Whoo, I didn't have breakfast, I'm just starving." And Pastor Stephen, in a very nice and kind way, just kind of made the comment, "You know, where I'm from in Liberia, starving has a very different meaning." And we had this very interesting discussion about how we in America like to throw that expression around, "Oh, I'm just starving." Well, when you say that to somebody from a culture who has actually seen and experienced starving, they probably take a little offense to it and probably go, "What is wrong with you silly Americans? Because you have more, you're responsible for more, you just at your fingertips, anything you could possibly want there." We really have no idea what it means to starve. Even though when we think about fasting, we think, "Oh, I can't do it. What am I going to do? I need that food." Well, just to be honest, some of us could probably go without a meal or two and probably not feel any negative effects. Maybe I'm just speaking about me at that level, but I'll just tell you. Oh, don't tap somebody next to you when I say that to be like, "Hey, talk." No, don't do that. There's a book out there called Spiritual Disciplines for the Christian Life. It's a great read. I recommend it. It's by a guy named Donald Whitney. And he writes this in that book. He says, Christians in a gluttonous, denialist, self-indulgent society may struggle to accept and begin the practice of fasting. Few disciplines go so radically against the flesh in the mainstream of culture as this one. And boy, isn't that true. So beyond the definition, what is fasting? Why would we consider doing it? You know, and here's a question. Is it a command? Is it something that we should be doing because it was commanded for us to do? Why are we so afraid of it? And how could someone go about incorporating this into our lives? That's what I want us to look at today. So believe it or not, even though it is rarely talked about today in Christian circles, fasting is actually mentioned often in the Bible. Would you believe that it's actually mentioned more times in the Bible than even a topic like baptism? Somebody had the statistics there, and it said fasting is referred to 77 times, baptism 75. Isn't that fascinating? Now, when it comes to Christian experience, none of us would look at baptism as optional, right? I mean, we don't believe it saves us, but we believe that that's the public expression to show the world that we've chosen to follow Christ. But none of us would come to this and say, you know what, baptism, that's just old, antiquated, and we really, just throw that out. It's not important anymore. None of us would do that, right? I mean, we're Baptists. We actually have the word in our name. We have to be serious about that, right? But for some reason, when it comes to fasting, we look at that and we're like, that one we can let go. But you read scripture, you find Moses and David, Elijah, Queen Esther, Daniel, Anna, Paul, and even Jesus, all fasting. And you go to the prophets and they talk about calling for fasting and different things like this. When you look at it deeper though, you may be relieved to know that nowhere in the Bible is fasting commanded. It is never said that you must fast. So now everybody can breathe a sigh of relief and go back to making your lunch plans, because I know that was a concern. But even if it isn't commanded, is it something we can't ignore either? In his Sermon on the Mount in Matthew chapter 6, Jesus actually gives some instructions that deal with fasting. And so Matthew chapter 6, we're going to read just a few verses here, and we're going to see what Jesus actually taught his disciples and the crowd that was around him, because this is part of the Sermon on the Mount, so he had a crowd of people around him, and he's talking about this subject of fasting. Listen to what he says. Jesus says, when you fast, do not look somber as the hypocrites do, for they disfigure their faces to show others they are fasting. Truly, I tell you, they've received their reward in full. But when you fast, put oil on your head and wash your face. He's basically saying, take a shower, put your clothes on, look normal, so that it will not be obvious to others that you are fasting, but only to your Father who is unseen. And your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you. So here, right away, we see that Jesus is talking about fasting. But when he talks about it, he uses a word that makes us stand up and pay attention. Because notice the word he uses around it. He doesn't say, what he says is he says, when you fast. When, and that word when is going to be the interesting word, because he doesn't tell us, he says you must fast, but he also doesn't say to us if you fast. He says when you fast. Now, if you're like me, what I want to immediately do is find a loophole right here and be like, all right, there's something cultural going on. There's something special about this moment that we in the 21st century can kind of go, okay, whew. Not talking to us. But the problem with that is anytime we see a teaching like this, it's kind of important for us to get the context of the whole thing. Let's look back at some verses before and maybe some verses after and say, okay, what else is Jesus saying that can give us clues about what he's teaching about in this moment? And when we look back just a little bit earlier in Matthew chapter 6 at verse 2, Jesus says this. He says, so when you give to the needy, there's that word, when you give, listed here. And giving is a regular, or should be, a regular part of life for those that follow Jesus. In fact, we would be hard-pressed to say, well, that doesn't apply anymore. We're not supposed to give. In fact, if you look at the rest of the New Testament, over and over and over again, it talks about encouraging us to give and living generous lifestyles. And that should be something that permeates us as Christians, is giving, giving of our times and giving of our talents, not out of obligation, but in response to what we've been given, which is the very life of Jesus Christ. And yet when Jesus talks about giving, he uses that same word that's giving us problems. He says, not must or if, but when. Okay, that's one problem. So now we're going to jump to verse 5, because in the same message, he moves from the topic of giving and he moves to the topic of prayer. And then in verse 5, he begins with this. He says, "And when you pray, do not be like the hypocrites." And he goes on, and then he goes into the Lord's Prayer, which all of us would say, that's a big deal. And yet in this moment, he's taking all of our excuses out, because prayer, again, is not something that we list on the things of optional for Christians. Prayer should be something that's incorporated daily, part of our lives. And yet, as Jesus talks about this, he then uses giving and prayer and fasting all together, naming all three of them, not saying you must do them, not saying if you do them, but saying when you do them. And so obviously the only conclusion we can draw from this is that as Jesus is teaching in this moment, there is an expectation that he has that his followers will fast, just as he expected them to give and to pray. And the reason for his teaching on all three of these things in this moment was not to say, hey, do this, because the expectation was there. And what he was wanting to make sure is that when you do them, I want to make sure that you do them correctly. I want to make sure that when you do them, you make sure you're doing them with the right motivation and the right reason. An interesting side note here, one of the commentaries I read this week had an interesting take on these passages about giving and praying and fasting. And they said that it realized that it's possible that Jesus was identifying three distinct relationships we have in our Christian walk. So when it talked about giving, it's kind of our responsibility that we have toward others. And prayer is kind of our responsibility towards God. And fasting is our responsibility towards ourselves. And I thought that was a very fascinating way to look at that. It's important to note that just like with the other disciplines, though, when it comes to fasting, there are spiritual ways and non-spiritual ways. There are Christian ways and non-Christian ways to fast. And the type of fast that Jesus is talking about here isn't just about skipping a meal every now and then. It's not just about taking a day off from eating for the sake of going hungry. In fact, when we look at biblical fasting, what we have to understand is it always centers on a spiritual purpose. It always centers on spiritual purposes. Without a spiritual purpose, fasting is nothing but a glorified diet where we hope to get in beach body shape. That's it. This can also descend into a legalistic ritual that makes us miserable and self-centered instead of focusing on God, and it becomes this exercise in willpower and endurance. In my studying this week about fasting, I read a story about a man who tried to fast, and he says this. He said, "I fasted on several occasions and nothing happened. I just got hungry. I tried it, but then I thought, okay, I'm going to do it one more time. I'd put it off for several days. I mustered up all the strength to try it. I couldn't go to breakfast table with my family because I didn't think I'd have the willpower to not eat. So I went to work. The coffee break was almost unbearable. All I could do all day was think about how hungry I was. I told myself, if I ever get through this, I will never do this again. I couldn't concentrate. All I could hear was the growling of my stomach. The aroma of dinner was all I could bear. I figured if I could make it to midnight, I would have fasted all day. And I made it. And as soon as that clock struck 12, I dug into food. I don't think that day of fasting helped me one bit." You know why? Because it was missing the primary element that fasting must contain, which is a spiritual purpose. It's not just denying yourself food. It has to be focused on something, focused on God. Fasting is not a hunger strike where we're trying to gain political power or attract attention to a good cause. And it's also not a child's temper tantrum where we say to God, "God, I need you to hear me. I want you to do what I want you to do. So God, I'm just not going to eat until you pay attention to me." That's not what we're talking about. It's not about getting our way. So what is it about? Why in the world would I stand up here and encourage you to incorporate this discipline into your life? What possible good could come from it? Well, first we need to see that there are several benefits from fasting. First one is this. It can, if done properly, takes the focus off ourselves. and off the external things in our lives and can redirect it towards God. Again, remember, that's if we're doing it with the right frame of mind. If all we're doing is trying to say, I'm not eating, then you're focused on you. And those hunger pains will drive you crazy, even though they're mostly phantom, because trust me, we could go a meal or two without getting that hungry. But the ultimate goal of fasting is to take the focus off ourselves and get to know God better. And instead of trying to say, hey, God, look at me, I'm being all spiritual, pay attention to me. No, it's not that. It's a way of saying, God, I'm focusing my attention on you. It's my way of focusing my attention on you. And it leads us, when we begin to focus our attention on God, it leads us, what I think is the second reason we need to fast, is because fasting will reveal what has control over us. Now, this is not popular either. But in many of our lives, okay, let me talk about Brent for a second. I have a little bit of an OCD compulsion in my life. It shows up in places, you could see it. So a new show comes out on Netflix, Stranger Things 2, let's say. You know what my compulsion is? To just sit down and watch all 10 hours of that sucker just right at one time. Now keep in mind, I have a full-time job. I do have a wife that likes for me to pay attention to her occasionally. I have 7 children currently living in my house. I could go on. But my tendency is to say, let me shove all that aside because I really want to watch this. Fasting has a way of revealing to us what really has power in our lives, what really has control over us, what may have too much influence, what may have come between us and God. There's a 19th century theologian, his name's William Inge, and he said this, it says, it is necessary that we should steadily resolve to give up anything that comes between ourselves and God. You see, when we fast, we learn so much about ourselves, especially those things that we begin to turn to bring us joy and to bring us peace. How many of us turn to food for comfort? How many of us turn to food to make us feel better? Rough day, I'm going to eat in order to satisfy that. That tells us, and you guys know me, I'm pointing fingers back at me more than you all the time. But that reveals so much about what has power in our lives. And sometimes we need to push away. Sometimes we need to say no, just so we can kind of understand how much of our peace depends upon the pleasure of eating, or how much our satisfaction in life depends on scrolling again to see if there's any new Facebook updates in the last 30 seconds. Or binge watching that next Netflix show. Fasting shows what has ultimate control over us. If we are unwilling or unable to go without food occasionally, what does that say about us? If we can't stop checking Facebook every 30 seconds, what does that say about us? And interestingly enough, Ryan mentioned this a few weeks ago to me. There was an article written that talked about how on your phone, especially Facebook, you know how you refresh Facebook? You swipe down, right? And it kind of gives you a little circle thing and then brings up news stories. The article was talking about how that action of swiping down is just like a casino, and the arm on a slot machine and the psychology behind getting that worked into your mind. So let me swipe and woo, is somebody else going to tell me what they had for lunch? As if we care. And we laugh, but it's so true. It is so true. Oh, has anybody updated? What did we do before knowing what everybody ate for lunch? I mean, seriously, it's ridiculous. It is ridiculous. But fasting, if we're willing to bring this in, can begin to show us these things that have control over us. It can begin to show the power that we may not even realize that it's exercising over us. Because, you know what? Food is not bad. Facebook's not bad. But slowly, without controlling those things, they can overwhelm us and they can take over. Before Jesus began his ministry, you know, he spent 40 days in the wilderness fasting and praying. It was during this time that Satan came and tempted him. And in one of those temptations was with food. And Satan looks at him and he says, "Oh, why don't you turn these stones to bread?" And I'm sure that would have been tempting. Good Lord, I love bread. It's one of my favorites. Oh, man. But Jesus doesn't give in. In fact, he turns to Satan and he says, what he doesn't say is he doesn't say, "You know what? I'm hungry. I've done this long enough." No, he looks and he responds by saying, "You know what? Man shall not live by bread alone, but on every word that comes from the mouth of God." Why is he saying this? Is he saying food's bad? Not at all. What he's saying is that there's always going to be things in life that we want to put ahead of God. Things we're tempted to look towards for our joy, our satisfaction, our purpose for living. Things that start out as good, but in some way and in some fashion end up controlling us more than we think they do. And there should be nothing that comes between us or God. I mean, there is this aspect that says, look, God is enough. Jesus is enough. And fasting challenges that within us. Do we really believe that God can and will sustain us more than food, more than Facebook, more than Netflix, more than whatever, fill in the blank? Maybe we need to fast from food or other people or media, hobby, sleep, sex, whatever may it be that we find that we need to fast that may be affecting us more than we thought. And set aside time to focus on God and get his perspective on it. None of the things I've listed are evil. None of them are inherently sinful or wrong. They're just normal things. But everything, even good things, can exert undue power over us. Tim Keller recently tweeted this. He said, "Sin is not just bad things, but good things we make ultimate over God." And fasting is one of the ways we can make sure we keep these things in check. Another thing fasting does for us is fasting also helps us learn how to not have what we want all the time. Parents, this is easy for us, right? I mean, we want to teach our kids, "Well, I want this and I want that." But you know what? We live in a culture that doesn't do that. And I'm the world's worst. Good golly gee, new Apple product comes out and I'm in line at the store. I mean, sometimes I need to tell myself no for that, right? But nobody likes the spoiled brat, but how many times do we fall into that category? New Year's Day, my family were sitting at the home just taking it easy, and my kids decided to watch Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, not the old 70s version, not the new one, crazy one with Johnny Depp. Anybody remember Veruca Salt in that movie? Isn't that great? What is it? "I want a Loompa Loompa now, Daddy." You know, that kind of thing. I mean, it's amazing. I love that. She sings the song, "She's a Bad Egg," and falls into the furnace and all that. Love that. You know, that's great. Nobody likes her. Nobody likes her. Anybody here like her? But sometimes we act like her. Because even Christians are not good at self-denial. We're not. Our behavior and our lifestyles mimic the world far too often. And part of the Christian life, though, is self-denial. Because self-denial is so critical to forming character within us. It forces us to see God as our source and not ourselves. It's just like with our bodies. I've put on a little weight over the last year. Let me tell you what, I didn't get here by denying myself. Just the opposite. I told myself yes every time. Yes to another bowl of ice cream. Yes to another donut. Yes to sleeping in and not getting up and going to exercise. And let me just tell you what, I discovered something. My body is smart. It knows exactly what to tell me to keep me in bed for another 20 minutes. It knows exactly the strings to pull to say, "No, go get that. It looks really good." My body is more clever than I want to give it credit for. And it knows how to get what it wants. But what happens if I begin very simply at first, if I begin to deny myself something to focus on God? I bet we would all be surprised at the results. Another reason to fast is it humbles us before God. It humbles us when we begin to deny ourselves. We become less and less important in our own eyes, and God becomes bigger and bigger, and we understand him better, and we can know him better, and we see just how big he is and how small we are. and we're reminded just how much we need Him. Another one is fasting can be an expression of repentance. Time and time again in the Bible, when people recognize their sin, one of the things that they do, it's not because they needed to fast, but a fast was an outward expression of what was happening to them internally. They were truly sorry over what they had done, and therefore to reflect that, they said, we're going to deny ourselves food. Fasting can also be an expression of love and worship. In Luke chapter 2, we read the story of Anna, and she's a widow who stayed at the temple, and it says that she worshiped with fasting and prayer night and day. That was just part of her worship expression. Fasting can also be to seek God's guidance. We read in Acts 14, Paul and Barnabas are going around, they're planting churches, and one of the things they're needing to do is set up leaders in these churches. And how did they pick these leaders? It tells us they fasted and they prayed. That was how they sought God's guidance. And I will tell you, we sometimes will do fasting to say, God, speak to me. And sometimes He will and sometimes He won't. And we just need to understand that. And it's not a thing we do to get our way. But it is a way that we want God to speak to us. I will tell you that when we begin to deny ourselves, it will definitely make us more open and receptive to God and be able to more clearly hear His voice when He speaks than if we don't. One final reason I think we can fast is this: it can bring breakthrough. It can bring breakthrough. Sometimes it takes more than just talking about something to see results. And fasting reminds us that our physical hunger pains aren't really the important thing that's happening in that moment. It reminds us there's something spiritual that's even more important than what's happening to us physically. And of everything I've listed there, those eight reasons to fast, not one of them said you do it because God will like you better or you'll earn God's favor. But in that book that I mentioned earlier, Donald Whitney says this. He says, fasting is when we hunger for God, for a fresh encounter with God, for God to answer a prayer, for God to save someone, for God to work powerfully in our church, for God to guide us or protect us, more than we hunger for the food God made us to live on. What kind of breakthrough do we need? Sometimes we need to deny ourselves in order to see that happen. Let me wrap up with just a few practical suggestions. So I've told you we should do it. How do you do it? Well, let me just say this. There is no right way necessarily on fasting. There's certainly wrong ways, and there are some of you that should not fast. That is medically detrimental to your health, and so you probably shouldn't. If you wonder if you should, see your doctor, because going without food is a serious issue, and you know there's reasons why you shouldn't. There's no right amount of time to fast. The Bible doesn't say fast a meal, fast a day, fast 40 days. In fact, all those are mentioned in the Bible, 3 days, 7 days, 14 days. It's wide open, however long you want to do it. I would recommend that if you decide to do it, start small. Skip one meal, because for some of us, that's big. For me, that'd be big. Then, you know what? If you've done that, try one or two meals. Maybe try a day or longer if you feel God leading you to. Plan ahead. I'm not telling any of you to fast lunch today, okay? Whew, that's good, because we weren't going to anyway. That's right. Fasting, you need to plan ahead. It's important that you think about this. You don't just necessarily wake up and go, I'm going to fast. No, give yourself some forethought. Plan ahead. You usually can't do this well at the last minute. And with that, if you plan ahead, don't stock up. Don't pig out the night before thinking, woo, because then you're going to have a carb hangover and all this kind of stuff is going to be terrible. Don't stock up. That will only hurt you, not help you. Be normal before you go into it. As you're doing it, drink water or teas. I mean, there's all kinds of different ways to fast. There are normal fast and partial fast and absolute fast. I mean, we read about Moses. He was on the top of Mount Sinai for 40 days, and we don't think he had water or food. God sustained him miraculously. I don't recommend that. You need water, at least. So make sure you're drinking water or fruit juices or tea. Try to be consistent. Work it in your life. When I was doing it in my early 20s, it was a weekly practice. Every Wednesday I fasted. I fasted breakfast and lunch because that was the day our small group met, and I fasted and prayed during those mealtimes for my small group, for the people in that group, and for our meeting that night. And then when it came time for small group, we ate at the end of our group meeting. I broke my fast with my small group in that moment. But it was a weekly routine. So try to be consistent with what you're doing. As you're doing this, Occupy yourself. Don't just sit around and think about how hungry you are going, oh, I need to eat. No, figure out something to fill the time. Read the Bible, pray, meditate, worship, something to fill the time. Otherwise, without that spiritual purpose, you're just getting hungry. Use your withdrawal symptoms, those hunger pains, as a reminder of why you're doing this. Maybe you're going to fast because you have a child that you're concerned about and you want to pray for them. You know what? Every time that stomach growls, you know what that is? That is the reminder, a better reminder than any iPhone notification you could ever get. Brr, oh, I'm praying for my child today. God, I pray such and such. And every time you feel that, it's that automatic reminder to pray. And then the last one is this, don't be miserable. Jesus actually talks about this one. The Pharisees loved to just mess up their hair and they'd walk around all sad and pathetic. And they'd be, I'm fasting. And people would be like, oh, that's so good of you. You are so spiritual. Jesus said, look, get up, take a shower, do your hair, put deodorant on. I mean, it's all right. You're going to live through this. And the most important thing, reason for you to fast is not so other people come along and tell you how spiritual you are. The only one that matters is God. So I would encourage you, if you're fasting, let your spouse know. I mean, if you don't show up at the dinner table, they may be like, what did I do? I don't know what I've done. You know, you can let people know, but you don't have to announce it to the entire world on Facebook. Guys, guess what? I'm fasting today. Don't do that. Bad. But don't be miserable. Don't walk around sad and depressed. That's not what Jesus is telling us to do. In fact, what's interesting is Dallas Willard talks about this discipline, and he actually says, you know, when Jesus says, don't look miserable and depressed, he says it's because Jesus is saying you shouldn't be. There can be joy when we fast, that when we do this, it's a good thing, and you can be like, man, this is great. Somehow we get in our minds that, oh, I got to fast. No, we get to fast. We get to know God better, and he's going to commune with us and connect with us when we do this. This is a really good thing. So those are some steps or some ideas in how you can do it. You know, and maybe it is food. Maybe it is Facebook. I give Amy a lot of credit. Last year during Lent, she fasted Facebook. She took the app off her phone. I mean, she went 40 whole days. Right, Amy? You did 40 days without Facebook, weirdo. I mean, but that's what she did. You know what? I remember in my 20s, I was teaching at a private Christian school, and I had a student who was very addicted to TV, almost as much as I was. And I can remember challenging her, saying, let's do a TV fast. I challenged her. I said, let's do a week. I don't think she made it the week. I turned my fast of media and television into a three-month thing. I didn't even touch or turn on a television for 3 months. You know what? Didn't miss it either. Should probably take that lesson and remember there's a lot of things in my life that I could cut out and not miss either. So let me wrap this up here. Now I realize as we go through this series, every week we're talking about a spiritual discipline, and we're using the word discipline because that's important, because it takes effort. These things don't happen naturally. Just like if you want to get healthier, it takes exercise. You have to do some things. Discipline is a key part of what we're talking about, okay? But what we're not doing is we're not putting in your life a laundry list of things for you to feel guilty about. Because I can imagine that some of you may be out there today going, great, thanks a lot, Brent. One more thing for me to feel guilty about, because I already feel guilty about my prayer life. I feel guilty about not worshiping you during the week. So now I can feel guilty about not fasting. That's not what we're doing. That's not our objective, and that's not our goal. But I would challenge you to say, what if maybe something we've mentioned or will mention in the coming weeks speaks to you? And as we talk about it, you're thinking, I haven't done that, haven't tried it, been lax in it. Maybe I should. Because what if by bringing one of these disciplines in or experimenting or whatever, what if it's that discipline that causes the spiritual breakthrough that you've been so desperately desiring? What if it's that discipline that gets you out of the spiritual rut that you feel like you've just been in for a little while? That's why we do this. Not to say, if you don't do this, feel guilty, but to say, hey, there's a whole scope of things, disciplines out there that are at our disposal to help us connect with God, to help connect with one another, and to bring about spiritual life and spiritual vitality. What if, by you deciding, you know what, this week, I'm not going to eat breakfast, I'm going to forego lunch, I'm not going to be crazy, I'm going to need dinner by that point, but during both of those times, I'm just going to spend a little more time praying. I'm just going to turn my attention and just say, God, I just want to know you better. And what if it's through that, that something amazing happens that could never have happened otherwise? You see, Jesus says in Matthew chapter 6, he tells us, he says, there's going to be a reward. There's something beneficial by doing this. No, it's not everybody coming along and patting you on the back and say, oh, good job. Remember, you're not announcing all this to the world. But he tells us, he says, look, when you take these steps to know God more, God sees, God knows, and God says, this is great. You know what the reward is? You're going to know me, and you will experience life way beyond what this world can offer. Just do it. So let me challenge you and encourage you this week. Give it a shot. I may be crazy for even suggesting it. Who knows? Maybe it's worth talking about over lunch today as you eat. It's a good time to talk about not eating, right? Will it be easy? No. That's why they're called disciplines. They require effort. But what is it worth for the potential to experience Jesus in a richer, deeper, fuller way than we've ever experienced before? And then we get to see the power of God healing, restoring, transforming in ways that we've never experienced. What's the value of that? That's the question.